All right, good morning. Thanks for being here today. My name is Brian, one of the leaders. And, you know, I know there's a lot of other things you could be doing Sunday morning, so I'm glad that you came out. We are in the book of Exodus, and I'm just going to review quickly, and then I'm going to play a song that I had been thinking of, and then Tammy was telling me about it, and so I decided I'm going to play that this morning. It's a song by Casting Crowns. The quality isn't the best as far as the image goes, but I think the song's appropriate for where we're at. Let me explain to you where we're at. If you look at Exodus 3, the story is Moses is in the midst of 40 years of figuring out that there's not much to him. Okay, and we were able to relate to him. This idea of, in a lot of ways, not being all that special. Just an ordinary man in the desert, leading sheep around. And then we see this encounter with God, the first time that God has spoken in hundreds of years. And Moses has this encounter with him. And God is telling him that my people, the Israelites, who are enslaved in Egypt, you are going to lead them out. You're going to redeem them. Bring them to their promised land. And Moses' response was, who am I? And we talked about this picture of when we encounter God, where we have this idea of God speaks and he's speaking to all of us. He's calling us all to something. And then we see this response from us is we have this crisis of belief or this challenge. And one of the things that we want to do is just push against what God's calling us to do, because what God's calling you to do is typically something out of your realm of comfort, something out of your realm of ability. So we see Moses responding to God very similar to how we would respond to God, with who am I? And Casting Crowns basically wrote a song in light of that statement. So you should be able to follow up the lyrics and go ahead.
Who am I that the Lord of all the earth would care to know my name? Would care to feel my hurt? Who am I that the bright and morning star would choose to light the way for my ever wandering heart? Well, not because of who I am, but because of what you've done. Not because of what I've done, but because of who you are. I am a flower quickly fading, here today and gone tomorrow. A wave tossed in the ocean, a vapor in the wind. Still you hear me when I'm calling, Lord, you catch me when I'm falling, and you told me who I am.
The song just repeats over and over, so we just stopped it there. Just kidding. YouTube stopped loading, so the song stopped. Anyway, hopefully that song is an encouragement. What we wanted to do is just give you a taste of it. You can go home and listen to it on your own. Casting Crowns, Who Am I? All right, before we actually get started in the teaching, which is going to be chapter 5, I just wanted to present something to you. We were sending, or I was sending an email from Community Baptist Church in Montoursville, which is out Route 87, inviting us to be part of a conference they have March 3rd and 4th, which is based on Answers in Genesis. And this is the pamphlet that goes with it. And basically what it's talking with is, Answers in Genesis is talking about the book of Genesis and how there's a lot of ideas that challenge that. And it's dealing with, the first two are going to be a little challenging because we have church at that point, but there's a lot of people that want to attend this. Maybe we'll figure out an alternative plan. But racism and evolution, the Tower of Babel, the flood, who should we trust, dinosaurs in the Bible, and creation evangelism. The one that's really interesting to me, and unfortunately, you know, I'm not sure how we're going to do it, but racism and evolution, I'll just throw out a quick idea. James Watson, one of the guys who discovered DNA, in October of, I don't know, I'm going to say 2010, basically said that what I don't understand how no one can come to this conclusion, that if you believe in evolution as the source of how humans came about, you have to have racism. And James Watson is clearly a racist. He basically said, Africa, we can't instill European policies in Africa because Africans aren't nearly as intelligent as Europeans. Guys, that is an evolutionary thinking. You have to agree with that if you believe that we are here as a result of evolution. He, of course, got completely hammered for saying that, but for the wrong reasons. He didn't get hammered because people are saying, no, we are all created in the image of God. There's no difference between black and white or any other races. So anyway, I'm glad to see that there is a talk on that, because if you're an evolutionist, I don't know how you say that there aren't differences in races. So anyway, you can think about scheduling that for March 3rd and 4th. If that's something that's super interesting to you, talk to me, because like I said, maybe we'll make some alternative. Community Baptist Church, which is out Route 87, it's the large church. There's actually a big gas pipe being put in right next to it. It looks like a spaceship thing being built. It was on fire for a while. When it's on fire, it's super cool. Has anybody seen it lit up at night? It's unbelievable. It's going to be perfect for when we get into the tabernacle. You'll see if it's perfect. Okay, so that was Answers in Genesis. All right, here we go. Exodus chapter 5. So in chapter 4, I just want to give you a quick summary before we get into chapter 5. In chapter 4, remember, Moses had told the Israelites, God spoke to me, and they believed Moses, and remember, they worshiped. So the Israelites were like, excellent. God has finally heard us after hundreds of years. God has heard us, and he's promised to remove us out of slavery. So they were excited. Okay? Here we go. Chapter 5, verse 1. After this presentation to Israel's leaders, Moses and Aaron went and spoke to Pharaoh. They told him, "This is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. Let my people go so they may hold a festival in honor of me in the wilderness." Okay, so the reason this is a big deal is they are slaves, they're busy, and they're essentially going into their boss and saying, hey, can we just get a couple more days off? Okay, that's the first pushback, is that Pharaoh's like, no, I think you need to just keep working, no more festivals. And there's quite a bit written on the fact that there were already a lot of festivals occurring because they were very polytheistic, they had lots of gods. So there's speculation that they had lots of days off already, and they didn't want to. He didn't want to give them any more days off. Okay, that's the initial thinking. All right, it progresses here. Go ahead. 5:2 says, "Is that so?" retorted Pharaoh. "And who is the Lord? Why should I listen to him and let Israel go? I don't know the Lord, and I will not let Israel go." So the first question we see here is Pharaoh saying, "Who is the Lord?" Now remember, at that time, Pharaoh was considered a god. So it's basically challenging his godship by them saying, "The Lord said to let them go. Now, who is the Lord is a very interesting question. It's also a good question for us. If someone asked you, who is God? Who is the Lord? Who is Jesus? How do you respond to that? Okay? We're going to see, go ahead, the next several chapters are essentially answering that question for Pharaoh. Pharaoh, by the end of about 6 more chapters, is going to know for sure who the Lord is. Okay? So this question is the bedrock for the next several chapters. Who is the Lord? All right? Okay, 5:3. But Aaron and Moses persisted. "The God of the Hebrews has met with us," they declared. "So let us take 3-day journey into the wilderness so we can offer sacrifices to the Lord our God. If we don't, he will kill us with a plague or with a sword." All right, so it's kind of interesting. The first time they went, it was kind of like this big declarative statement. Remember, God had just revealed himself to Moses and Aaron. They were pretty pumped up. They're like, "Wow, God has, you know, I put my hand in, it came out white. I put my hand back in, it was fine. My staff I threw down and became a snake. God has spoken. Things are looking good. Let's go tell Pharaoh what's going on." So the first time they're like, "Pharaoh, we're going to go." Pharaoh's like, "No." The second time they're like, "Would you please let us go?" Like, it was really interesting seeing the change in attitude. Okay? Now this is going to be important for us too. Because remember, I'm telling you, God is speaking to all of us. He's either calling us into a relationship with him. He's calling us to serve others. He's calling us to love our spouses differently. He's calling all of us to do something. And when you get that initial call, you're pretty fired up. But what you're going to see is you always get pushback. You're always going to have critics. And what you got to remember is that initial calling that you've had. And you see Moses and Aaron quickly aren't as brave as they were when they first got that calling. So verse 3 was more like, "Please?" Okay. Let's see here. What we got? 3 through 9 now. 4 through 9. Pharaoh replied, "Moses and Aaron, why are you distracting the people from their task? Get back to work. Look, there are many of your people in the land, and you are stopping them from their work." That same day, Pharaoh sent this order to the Egyptian slave drivers and the Israelite foremen. "Do not supply any more straw for making bricks. Make the people get it themselves, but still require them to make the same number of bricks as before. Don't reduce the quota. They are lazy. That's why they're crying out, 'Let us go offer sacrifices to our God.' Load them down with more work. Make them sweat. That will teach them to listen to the lies." Okay. I'll make this point and then I'll explain the bricks. When people of God attempt to devote their full service and allegiance to God, they encounter opposition from the world. Okay? This is two guys attempting to have all of Israelites devote their lives to God, and there is opposition. Same can be true for us. Again, I think sometimes we have a danger of making Satan too big and too powerful, and sometimes we neglect that he exists. He does exist. There is a battle. There is a war raging for our attention. Ephesians is real clear. Every day we're to be prepared for battle, for this spiritual battle that's going on It's real. And this is one of the ways it plays out. And Joe Fauch said, there's no spiritual progress without spiritual warfare. Okay? There is a battle going on. All right, go ahead and go to the next slide once. I'll read this and then I'll make the point. So the slave drivers and foremen went out and told the people, this is what Pharaoh says, we will not provide any more straw for you. Go and get it yourselves. Find it wherever you can. But you must produce just as many bricks as before. So the people scattered throughout the land of Egypt in search of stubble to use as straw. All right, go ahead. So these guys were making bricks, okay, all day long. This was an attempt to push them down. Remember, there's about 2 million Israelites at this point. They were getting too powerful, so he's saying, we're going to work their tail off. Well, they just complained, and so now he's saying, okay, you're complaining? That's fine. We used to give you the straw to make the bricks. Now you go get your own straw. That will teach you. I couldn't find the actual archaeological study, but there were about 3 references that there's evidence of Egyptian bricks where they've cut them open and they've looked inside early bricks on the lower foundation. The stubble would be like corn stalks or grain stalks that they would put in to make them harden. I guess I was actually reading some chemistry on this. It's kind of interesting. They release an acid as they're in there fermenting, and it causes the brick to even harden more than just regular clay. So it's really fascinating. But they found that the early bricks, the stubble was cut. And then they found halfway up that the stubble was just fragmented. And they're like, this makes sense. This is when the stubble was provided for them. Someone was cutting it and getting it ready for them. And then they look higher up on the buildings. They're like, this is when they had to go get it themselves. So I wish I could have found the actual paper on it, but I guess it's there to be kind of an interesting thing. The point is, this is historical truth. This stuff really happened. This isn't just made up stories. And that's what Answers in Genesis is really trying to emphasize, that conference that's going to be in a couple weeks. All right, 13 through 16. Meanwhile, the Egyptian slave drivers continue to push hard. Meet your daily quota of bricks, just as you did when we provided you with straw, they demanded. Then they whipped the Israelite foreman and who they put in charge to work over the crews. They haven't met your quotas either yesterday or today, they demanded. So the Israelite foreman went to Pharaoh and pleaded with him. Please don't treat your servants like this, they begged. We are given no straw, but the slave drivers still demand make bricks. We are being beaten, but it isn't our fault. Your own people are to blame. All right, interesting point here. I had just read where the Israelites were really excited. They worshiped God. They were pumped. They were going to be delivered. Their hope is quickly fading. It says they weren't thinking any more about their deliverance. They weren't sitting around making bricks thinking, man, this is exciting. God's going to deliver us. The daily task of the day has beaten them down where they no longer have their mind set on the good things. Think about your life. As you go to work, as you go to school, as the daily grind goes on, it quickly takes your attention off of the promises God has given you. That's what's happening to the Israelites right now. And the other thing is, go ahead and go to the next one. Well, you'll see, I'll probably be in this point, who do they go to when things are rough? Who are they going to? Pharaoh. You can see their attention quickly shifted to, oh, God's going to deliver us. That's great. But right now, I got to worry about Pharaoh. He can help me out. It's Pharaoh that I need on my side. Okay? 17. But Pharaoh shouted, you are lazy, lazy, lazy. That's why you're saying, let us go and offer sacrifices to the Lord. Now get back to work. No straw will be given to you, but you must still produce the full quota of bricks. The Israelite foreman could see that they were in serious trouble when they were with what they were told. You must not reduce the number of bricks you make each day. As they left Pharaoh's court, they confronted Moses and Aaron, who were waiting for them outside. The foreman said to them, "May the Lord judge and punish you for making us stink before the Pharaoh and his officials. You have put the sword into their hands, an excuse to kill us." Okay? I think this is a very interesting point. This is from Sonic Light. It says, behind their resentment, the Israelites' resentments of Moses and Aaron, was their ultimate resentment of God for bringing them worse trouble. Okay? They were told something good was going to happen. Something bad is happening. They are not happy. It says, when faced with the dilemma of either trusting God for their freedom or seeking relief by appeasing Pharaoh, they chose Pharaoh. So the Israelites are having a very, very hard day. Harder than any of our days. Okay? It's not going well. Let's see how Moses handles it. Then Moses went back to the Lord and protested, "Why have you brought all this trouble on your own people, Lord? Why did you send me? Ever since I came to Pharaoh as your spokesman, he has been even more brutal to your people, and you have done nothing to rescue them." All right. You see Moses staggering, as it says. But what can we take from Moses? He is crying out to God. I'm going to read you a section from that book in Redemption, and you're going to see that Jesus does the same thing. Jesus has a moment where it's not looking good. He's getting ready to be crucified. He cries out to God, as Moses is. He directed his cry to God, acknowledging that God alone ultimately controls everything. Moses directed his plea to the right master. I'm going to read this in light of that. So the picture that this guy is talking about here, Wilkerson, is saying, when Jesus is on the cross, he cries out, if you guys remember, says, my God, why have you forsaken me? An interesting thing is, that's from, he's quoting Psalms 22. I'm going to read that whole thing to you and then read some other things. It says, my God, why have you forsaken me? And think about your own life. Why are you so far from saving me? From my words and my groaning, oh my God, I cry by day and you do not answer. And by night, I find no rest. Okay, again, imagine and think about days where you've had where you're wondering, where is God? Yet you are holy, enthroned in the praises of Israel. In you our fathers trusted. They trusted and you delivered them. To you they cried and they were rescued. In you they trusted and were not put to shame. Okay, so here's what Wilkerson says. He says, religious leaders stood back from the cross where they were so scandalized by it that they mocked Jesus for his faith. The religious leaders were saying, he trusts in God, then let God pull him down now if he desires. So they sneered because, like you and me, listen to this, they measured the trustworthiness of God by present circumstances. Okay, so there's Jesus on the cross. He's crying out to God, and nothing's happening. They're making fun of Jesus. They're saying, how can you trust God when you're hanging on a cross? It doesn't look good for you. The reasoning goes something like this. If God is trustworthy and Jesus trusts him, then he wouldn't be hanging on the cross. So, either God is not trustworthy or Jesus lacks faith. That's the conclusion we draw. Think about your own life when things are not going well. Okay, it's either God is not doing his end or something's wrong on my end. Okay, the Israelites were told they're going to be delivered out of Egypt. Here's their answer. Okay, make the same amount of bricks, but we're not going to give you straw. There you go. There's your deliverance. They're like, this is not what we purchased this for. We did not join this to make our life stink. We, like broken-spirited Israelites, find it nearly impossible to keep trusting God as circumstances worsen. Think about that. As your circumstances get worse and worse and worse, does your trust in God increase? We are tempted to believe that God has forsaken us and that all hope is lost. Okay, that's where the Israelites are. They're like, this, it's gone. God didn't really say that. We believed Moses, we shouldn't have. Okay, the same thing's happening in your lives. Things aren't going well. You're like, what are you doing, God? Where are you? And it's not because we lack faith either. Jesus wasn't lacking faith. He was on the cross. Okay? Let me read this last part to you. Like Jesus, our hope in God must extend beyond the desire for relief from present suffering to a deeper, ultimate relief. That is the point that we got to really grasp. It's not about relief today. While it is not wrong to ask God to change our circumstances, our hope must remain in Him whether He changes them or not. As we cry out to Him, He becomes a refuge to us, a hiding place for safety and comfort. On this side of heaven, we will not experience ultimate comfort and refuge. I don't know about you guys, but I seek that. I am all about seeking comfort and refuge here on earth. Right? I mean, I think you guys probably put more effort into it than you think. I want my clothes to be comfy. I want my house to be the right temperature. I want my belly to always be nice and full. Okay, I want the music to be the right loudness, at right volume at home. Okay, I want comfort now, constantly. And when it's not comfortable, I get mad. Okay, it's usually my kids' fault. So I got to go and get them squared away. Okay, what am I doing? I'm constantly seeking comfort and refuge. And when it's not like that, I don't ever stop and, I shouldn't say never. I don't often, what my attitude should be is, this is earth. My ultimate comfort and refuge comes when I die and go to heaven and stand before Jesus. That is what my mindset should be on. Not, I can't believe how stupid people are for making my life uncomfortable. Okay? That's where I spend most of my thinking, and it's wrong. We're getting a picture from the Israelites. We see the end of the story. We can look at them and go, oh, look how foolish they are. They don't think God's going to bring them through the Red Sea and make it all happy for them. I can't believe how dumb. But yet we're miserable. We're complaining. We're not looking at the end picture. We got the end story for our lives as well. You trust in Jesus? You believe in Jesus? You know the end of the story. You spend eternity with Jesus. We shouldn't be so foolish either. So it says, on this side of heaven, we will not experience ultimate comfort and refuge. There will still be pain and danger. Yet, while we continue to hope in this promise for ultimate refuge, we can know Him as the true refuge now. Even if we should die suffering, clinging to this hope as Jesus did, we can be sure of the same resurrection. See, Jesus didn't waver in His faith because He knew the ultimate outcome. So He knew God wasn't ultimately turning His back on Him. He had faith in God. It just wasn't going as Jesus had wanted it to. We can have that same outlook. Okay? So, we end chapter 5 with a pretty bleak picture. The Israelites are complaining. Moses is a little stressed out, and it doesn't look good. Okay? But we know, just like Wilkerson said, in our lives, when we're in that same situation, which we're all in that same situation because of sin on earth, we're all suffering from something, we can have hope in the end of the story, which is spending eternity with God. I'm going to pray and then take questions and comments. God, thank you for giving us your word that we can see the end. Thank you that we have these different historical pieces recorded for us so we can see you at work. Even when it doesn't seem like you're at work, we know you are. We thank you for how comfortable we do have it on earth right now. Pray that that doesn't get our mind off of you, though, that we continue to think about you. Amen. All right, any questions, comments? Yeah.
Is there a good resource that you recommend for something that ties biblical history into here's what you learned in school history?
Oh, yeah.
Because I know the school's not, I don't homeschool my kids.
Right.
But the school's not going to teach them here's where the Bible fits into American history or the history of the world.
Yeah. Yeah, so the question is, are there resources to connect secular history with biblical history? And there are amazing resources that Trace would know exactly what they are. Tristan has a sore throat, so he's home, so everybody stayed home. So I have no idea what those resources are because I'm a neglectful dad and I don't know what my kids do in school. So Sarah's not here either, right, Brett? I think she uses that curriculum. Is Sarah here?
I think they're downstairs with the children.
Okay, well, she would. I think she uses.
What?
Do you use the same thing that Aaron uses, that curriculum for history, that history of the world? What is that? You guys don't know?
Well,
you're not there yet?
Oh,
yeah, but what book is it for the history that shows world history through biblical history? It's a book. I know what it looks like. Okay. There is a really good book. In fact, Trace was just telling me the other day, he's like, Dad, he goes, I love reading this thing. He's like, because he knows, like, Old Testament well. And it's because he's just constantly studying history in light of, like, Exodus and Samuel and all that. First and Second Samuel. Okay, well, next week I'll put a picture up of that book of what it is. It's a big book. There's pictures in it, though, which I like. Good question, though. There are resources out there. Okay. Any other questions? It's a good question. Yeah.
Just about the suffering thing.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for, at least for me, if it wasn't for going through suffering, I wouldn't be coming here. You know what I mean? I think it took me being brought down to nothing before I could accept.
That's a great point. And that's even clear in the Bible that God uses suffering to call us to him. And if it wasn't for suffering, you know, a lot of us wouldn't. Right. We wouldn't need that hope. And that's a great point. And I also wanted to make this point. I'm glad you said that. So God does use suffering to call us. And I also want to point out that suffering can be consequences to our bad choices and bad actions. I don't want to neglect that. You know, you go out and spend all your money from your paycheck on Friday, there's consequences to that. Like, you can't be like, I can't believe God doesn't have heat in my house. He's so mean. Well, what'd you do with your check? I just spent it all. I got, you know, so there's consequences. And there is time when God will use suffering as a, in a way to bring you back to him, as you said. So, and there's just times where it's just a result of being in a sinful planet. So great point, though. Thanks, Tara. Good. Any other comments or questions?
I have a comment.
Yeah.
You showed that Casting Crowns thing.
Yeah.
Casting Crowns is the Community Arts Center this month, I think.
They are. I think it's the month of March, isn't it? Yeah, that's a good point. Casting Crowns, they're doing an acoustic set in March at some point. You can go to WGRC.com and get tickets there, or you can go to the Community Arts Center. I think it's CACLive or something like that, .com, and you can buy tickets there. That's a great point. They are...
I think there's two shows, too.
I think someone is... One or two are opening up for them. There was a time a couple years ago where Aaron and I and the kids, I was friends with this guy who was working for a band who Casting Crowns was opening up for. So we went and saw like three or four of their shows, and we were like, it was just a weird time. But anyway, the point is, those guys are really neat guys, Casting Crowns. They only go on tour on the weekends, or I don't know how it works. They all have like normal lives. Like he's a youth pastor at a church in Atlanta or something, and I don't know. It's just a pretty cool story. Anyone else? Great comments.